On this episode of Football 301, we are live from the Combine in Indianapolis. Matt Harmon joins me. First, we do a little news roundup from around the league. Really fun, actually. A couple tidbits turned to bigger discussions with Matt. Then we looked at some prospects, some of the big names. Jeremiah Love was pretty easy one to tout for me. Then we get to some under-the-radar guys. A very fun show live from Indy. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice, and we are live from Indianapolis at the NFL Combine, the 2026 edition. I'm joined by my friend, Matt Harmon here. Great to see you. It's been 2 weeks since I've seen you.
I know.
But still great to see you in another city, of course.
No doubt. Somebody said on Twitter the other, like, I think it was either this morning or last night, oh, you know, Super Bowl 15 days ago. I was like, wait, are you serious? Like 15 days ago? That feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But hey, such is the nature of the NFL offseason. So I'm excited today. We're going to have a good conversation.
And I'm curious, once we go to 18 games and 2 bye weeks, and they push it back, is it just going to be a 1 week difference? Might as well just get a traveling circus going. Get our old Madmobile.
Can I say real quick, I just got done with the fantasy forecast that was live like an hour ago. And now it's really nice being in the other chair. Like, I feel really relaxed. Like, you've got all the pressure now, and I'm just gonna kick back here.
I'm trying to hide my phone in my lap as I have to peek down at my notes throughout the show. No, it is hosting live. Thank you for talking about that. Now I actually think about it. Usually I can just kind of coast through without
it. No problem.
I never think about anything. Just start the sentence. Just let's see where it goes. But we are here again. This is Combine 2 for you?
Yeah, 2 for me.
2. This is 11, I think, for me as a coach, scout, and now media member, but always fun to be here in Indy. They reconfigured Radio Row just a little bit, just a little half turn, a little half clock turn. It seems like a little swap, I should say, but still fun to be here. We're going to talk prospects today and some news that we're hearing, seeing, reading, tweet reading, however you want to do it, that we have seen in Indianapolis. We are going to start first with the Falcons have decided to franchise Kyle Pitts, tight end, which makes all the sense in the world. That cap figure will be in somewhere in the mid-teens. If I remember off the top of my head, that cap figure for the franchise tag.
But 15 million-ish.
I think 15 sounds right. Yep.
15, 16, something there.
Yeah, so that is, I think, an expected decision. You want to keep that kind of core trio of skill guys that they have there. And I mean, also, like, who else are you going to pay? Right. But Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and, of course, Bijan Robinson, that's the engine. And whoever they want to make at quarterback, whatever their decision is, this is only going to help them. But Kyle Pitts, still a Falcon, at least right now, looks like for next year, whatever happens with extensions. What do you think about this, Matt?
They were one of the teams that saw the biggest shift in terms of like their decrease in plays with 3+ receivers on the field to more heavy personnel packages last year. They ran a lot of 12 personnel last year, did the Atlanta Falcons. And of course, new coaching staff with Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Rees coming in, but those guys were also very 12 personnel heavy. So it makes sense to invest in that position. I wouldn't actually be surprised if they make another tight end investment somewhere along the way, like David Njoku's a free agent coming from Cleveland.
Great call.
Get somebody that's more like an inline guy, because Pitts, like what we saw last year when he really had his 2.0 breakout.
I
mean, it's hard to say he broke out last year because he had this great rookie season, but he's just had a bizarre career, which why I think he makes sense as a franchise tag guy anyways. I probably would just let him play on the tag. Even if he doesn't like it, I probably would let him play on the tag and see how that goes. Like, because he's, like I said, very up and down career, but great rookie season. And then at the end of this past year, he mostly popped off once Drake London went down. And I still think that's going to be something they have to figure out in this offense, is how can we get both of those guys activated at the same time, which I do think is easier said than done, because Kyle Pitts is a tight end kind of in name only. He is a movement player, but this coaching staff has experience with a guy like that in Harold Fannin last year. Yep. Well, I think he's probably a little bit better of a blocker than he's credited for, but still is somebody that you want to move around, detach from the formation, just like you will with Pitts. But Drake London's a guy that is best activated when he's moving around as that guy that's a power slot, but also kind of a movement Z type. So how they figured that out will be fascinating, especially because we also probably need to extend Drake London here pretty soon as well. He's certainly eligible for that. Garrett Wilson's already got an extension from that class. Chris Olave probably gets an extension from that class. So a lot to
not Treylon Burks.
Probably not. Hey, listen. Well, not Jahan Dotson either.
I actually did like Dotson.
I know. Hey, he's a free agent this year. Maybe this time. No, for real. But there's a lot to sort of figure out. on that Falcons team, but I think this is a good first step. Like, keep Kyle Pitts in the room. Like you said, you don't want to be losing talent at this point, because I said Drake London, like, what else they got going on at wide receiver either? Yep. So,
well, that just how you end, that was exactly how I was going to start my point, was that now receiver two was the biggest question. I mean, when Darnell Mooney was hurt. So it's like, if you just get Kyle Pitts, who can be used as a de facto receiver, you can do some cool, fun inverse stuff. Or invert stuff with him and Drake London, where London's a slot slash tight end. Pitts is, I mean, a perfect role. And Pitts is about, I'd say, 90% of what he was after a rookie as far as, like, athleticism. He was still, but that's the thing, he started as a plus-plus-plus athlete. So even if he's a plus-plus athlete, still very good. But he's still the big, long, athletic, good catching range. He improved as a blocker. I would say he's about average right now as a blocker. Yeah. But I love that point that you brought up with Njoku, because Njoku got so much better in line. That would open up stuff for Pitts. That would make a lot of sense offensively. Makes a lot of sense just age-wise as well. Personnel-wise, that makes a lot of sense. It would help alleviate concerns with the receiver room, because you can live in 12 or live in 12, and then it's like, all right, well, Pitts is a receiver anyway, so we're living. It's like, you know, how, shoot, the Bengals did it with the Gesicki, but I was just even going to say, in a perfect world with Travis Kelce, the Chiefs would be in 12 on third down, but it's just because Kelce's just a receiver.
He's
so that's
receiver.
Yeah, exactly. So it's 12 in name only. No, I thought this makes, again, all the sense of the world. It's a new regime. So again, they have no attachment to Pitts as far as when he's drafted, outside of ownership, and maybe some scouts that are still there. So they're going to make this decision. I think how you said it, where play on the tag, we'll see what we got. Are you 100% healthy, or at least close to it? Is this kind of what you were last year? Can we continue that? Maybe feature you a little bit more in this offense that, I mean, shoot, this offense got Trey McBride going in Arizona.
Right.
It was an offshoot, this type of offensive system. So this, and Njoku had breakout years, especially when Flacco was playing with them. So there's optimism here. I totally, because I was curious if he hit the open free agency, the open market, I'd be like, how much is he going to get paid? Because I would take, if I had money to burn, I would take a total chance.
Yeah,
at him.
Yeah.
Like, if I were the Patriots or something, like, why not? Like, you know, like, I throw money at this. So it makes a lot of sense.
Tight end's a position that, like, anecdotally gets better on the second contract anyways. So it makes a lot of sense in
that
way.
Reap the rewards of it.
Right. You might as well be doing it for your team. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Njoku was kind of one of those guys that got better once he was on his second contract. Yep. So we certainly see that.
Drafted young too.
At some point, obviously we're not going to do it on this show today. At some point, we do need to unpack, like, because we've talked about this in the past, and you always reference when you mentioned like Ben Johnson with Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown, like how they were able to activate that kind of move tight end and the power slot receiver. We need to, like, figure out exactly how teams can do that, because I've definitely, like, it's a thought exercise I have often, but, like, the specifics of it, that's probably one of the only ones that has, one of the only teams with the Lions and Ben Johnson actually applied it. The other ones has more been theories for me that haven't proven out correct. So.
And, well, I want to see Ben Johnson do more, because he was starting to experiment with Loveland, moving him around. I want to see if he tries to do that with Ndunze, who would be, like, I think a good maybe fit for trying to do that.
Bird's like a slot player, too.
Bird, too. Yeah, they could do some interesting things with those guys, too. And it's like just the threshold requirements. It's like, does the power slot, does that guy big enough to block and also hold up against linebackers, getting tackled by linebackers? Sam Brown can, Drake London can. And then the tight end has to be athletic enough to, if they're in zone, okay, I can just be a nice target out against zone, and I can go vertical enough that they don't just wave me away. I think ideally that's exactly how you'd use them. I'm really, there's some optimism with some parts of the Falcons, but they're projected at like 6.5 wins for a reason, because if you look at the other parts,
don't look at that thing called quarterback.
I will say Charles McDonald, who isn't here, weather, all that stuff on the East Coast, but he was even said, I want to bottom you out, because I want a top three pick for the next draft so we can actually get this quarterback. Can we get Arch? Build the Texas backfield and all that. So I know how he feels. I totally get it. They kind of feel like they need a little nuke.
they
need a little mini blow up, just to, like, okay, now we can reconvene and make this up. Controlled implosion.
Controlled implosion's good.
Maybe that's the best word, as opposed to the implosions that they've had the last few years.
Exactly.
moving on to maybe more storylines. So something from the Eagles caught your eye with their leadership talking to this week.
Yeah, in reference to A.J. Brown, it felt like they kind of sent some...
A.J. Brown in the news?
No, weird. Some maybe intentional mixed messages there. Nick Sirianni gave the classic sort of coaching quote, the Kyle Shanahan offshoot quote, where it's like, well, I can't guarantee that A.J. Brown will be on the roster, but I also can't guarantee that everybody will be alive, you know, tomorrow. The Kyle Shanahan famous quote where he said that about like Jimmy Garoppolo playing, right? So, I think that was interesting, but then Howie Roseman definitely kind of struck more of a tone of like, we expect A.J. to be here. But nothing really solidified. Yeah. You know, and yeah. when I saw the Sirianni quote, my first thought was, oh, he's gone.
Yeah, like,
he's out of there. If you're saying I can't guarantee,
yeah.
Now the full quote was a little bit more, like I said, in context. He leaves himself plenty of reason and ability to say, like, yeah, he will be on the roster. But usually my first instinct is that if they say he can't guarantee he's going to be there, then he's not going to be there. And I do think, like, this is probably the time, I think, for both parties to divorce. That's been my stance on it. I think that AJ can have success elsewhere, even if I think when we talk about this, I think there's been a step down yep. for him as a player. But I think that's like the type of name that needs to get introduced into this wide receiver market, because the free agents, now that Pickens has been tagged as expected, I don't know if Pierce is going to make it to the market, although I have a lot of conflicting feelings about if he's going to make it, if he should make it to the market and what's going to happen there. Like, once those guys are potentially off the board, there's some interesting veteran names. You know, Mike Evans, of course, is going to test free agency. And then the rest of them are kind of complementary yeah. type receivers that I think can help your room. But if AJ is even the player that he was last year, which, like I said, is, I think, a decline from his peak, that does give you a pretty, like, a real potential solution for a multi-year X receiver fix there if his body continues to hold up.
Yeah, I think, even yeah, how you closed it right there, because he is approaching the dreaded age of 30.
Yeah.
Boy, does it stink. No, and then, you know, cropping up injuries. He plays a physical style. He's a very mm-hmm. explosive player. He's always just kind of had stuff lingering, just totally. Kind of like one of these things. And I think based on team flow or team energy is how much he pushes through it. And I think that's very real, or how the offense is going. He's a guy that's proven to me now he fits in different types of offenses too. The goal ball heavy style, quick hitter style that the Eagles offense has become, and when he was with Tennessee, the play action heavy style that created a lot of yak opportunities over the middle. So that's kind of fun, because it's not like where I'm like, oh, I don't know if he's a fit there. I think he's perfect for a team. This is not news to anyone that you got 1-2-year window and we're making that push. And then mm-hmm. it's like after that, then we're going to have to like see what we got.
Yeah.
So that's contenders. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what I look at here. There's certain teams I do and do not like, but it's really the ones, you know, the Bills are going to get thrown out there.
Of course.
I mean, I think the Ravens should be thrown out there, like, but that'd be an interesting match.
Ravens, I don't want to go near anybody that's over 30.
You know, like, what's so funny is they've just always been a receiver wasteland outside of Steve Smith.
Yeah.
Like, we're just like, everybody, they were drafting receivers, even when I was a kid, like Marcus Robinson and Dwayne Bates.
Yeah.
Like, they're just these guys, they draft all these guys and they just never become anything. Like, yep. Yeah, it's been like that in Baltimore for years. Yeah,
the funny thing is, though, like, they did. I know Zay Flowers is like not everybody's cup of tea, and I have mixed. He's 1,200 yeah. yards yes. last year. Like, he's the quietest, like, 1,200 yard receiver
it's
ever.
It's one of those where it's like, you like don't want to like overhype him, because you don't want to like be like, yeah. one of those people. Oh, he's top 10, but he's no. like just a good player.
But he,
like,
he just produces top 10 numbers, like yeah. From a yards per out yeah. basis, any of that stuff every single year. But I think we can all watch him and say there's some meat left on the bone there. And I do
think when he goes backwards,
yeah, right, right. Literally, it's so funny. Like, not to pat myself on the back, but I think I recently went back and reread his RP prospect profile, just like perfectly encapsulated who he is as a player. Like, great, can beat man coverage yeah. and play more outside than you think for a guy that's yep. smaller, but he's very mistake prone. Like, that's the summary of it, and that's pretty much who he's been in the league. So I do think Baltimore needs like a big body yes. type like an AJ Brown, but I have also seen like people connect him to Mike Evans, which I'm like, that's the type they always go after, and I yeah. do agree it's what they need.
Yeah,
but man, not it's just iteration. There's a long yeah. photoshops of like old receivers and Ravens jerseys were just like hasn't really worked out of late.
Too late.
It's always 1 year too late. Maybe that's not the case for AJ Brown, but I do think I'm obsessed with thinking about receiver age in particular.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite but least favorite topic to talk about. I think it's really fascinating, which is why I like to talk about it and think about it, but it's really hard to nail down like which receivers age really well. Typically we see the technicians,
yeah.
you know, the Keenan Allens, the Stephon Diggs, like those guys were still productive players last year, even though they had clearly declined. I think they've had more graceful declines where, you know, guys like Dez Bryant right off the cliff,
oh,
guys like Allen Robinson right off the, when it was so,
yeah.
so over. And I do wonder like which category AJ Brown leans more into, because he's a better technician than you probably would give him credit for, but he is still, I think, a player who has relied on his explosiveness and power,
yes.
which again, I think there's it's hard to peg down there.
And that's the thing too, is that his ball skills are just, you can see his baseball background all the time, like
oh,
how
yeah.
he adjusts for stuff, but that's, he's able to do that because he has a step on a guy.
Exactly.
It's
harder when the guy's a little closer quarters.
I love AJ Brown. I'm not trying to knock
no,
him,
yeah.
but it's just, he's not a guy, like, watch his highlights. There's not a lot of the, like, back shoulder like adjustment. Yeah, he does it. Don't get me wrong, but that's not how he wins. He wins with those late hands, beating guy over the top, and then just underneath, he just, I mean, it's like TO.
Yeah.
Where, it, yeah, just so physical. No, I wanted that too. And the, a guy I talked with, and I brought this up before, I know this, but someone that works in an NBA front office, I kind of been like offhand friends with, we were talking one time about athleticism, how it ages. And he was like, oh, you always think it's the old man at the Y that's going to be the guy that ages well. He goes, well, they're already started as an average athlete.
Right.
And as you get older, And he goes, you hope for the guys that are like Vince Carter, who starts as a star, as a fantastic athlete, but they learn enough real basketball. So when they age, now they become an average athlete, but they know. And he goes, but you need the guy. We talked about this with Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You need the guy to have that type of mindset to go, I'm going to be a gritty guy now. I'm going to do the dirty work. And it's like, not everyone's like that.
That's
like,
such a great point, specifically with the receiver. Like I said, Allen Robinson's a great example. Like he did not run like a fast 40 whatsoever, but he was one of the best deep ball receivers in the league because he was so technically proficient off the line of scrimmage.
Ball skills
at the break point. Yeah, the ball skills. And I mean, I love A-Rob, but like that obviously did not age well.
Yeah.
Once the lower body injuries started to kind of to sack up there, he was like, what, 29 when he signed with the Rams? And he was not moving like a 29-year-old at that point.
We got their little Steelers power slot era there. Yeah. That was perfect for him, but it was like you needed to do that earlier and then it's not exactly what you're about. Like, I know. I'm glad we got to talk about that because that fascinates me too, because I think athletes are aging better because of science and everything. So, but like receivers just in corner and running back now because of our touches and everything.
Yep.
So we can talk about this all day. But other news roundup before we hit our first break. The Jets have announced they're using some sort of tag, transition tag or franchise tag. I think transitional tag on Breece Hall. Makes sense. You can't let every talented player hit the trade block or hit the street. Elijah Vera Tucker, their talented offensive lineman, I was gonna say guard or tackle, always been hurt. Seems like he's gonna test free agency. Of course they've already traded away every notable defender that they have. Breece Hall, though, I kind of wanted him to see hit free agency, like just selfishly, sorry Jets fans, just because I wanted to see him on a team that's like going places for next year. In a few years, Jets, we'll talk about you. But I think with Breece Hall, like that just makes sense. I mean, their running back room is, even with Braylon Allen coming back from injury, you don't know. But that was like their strength of their offense was their running back room. Interesting skill players. And with the Jets, we kind of talked about this a week or two ago when we were talking about quarterback landing spots, I think. But makes sense. Breece Hall coming back. But any thoughts on this?
It felt inevitable, honestly. And I think
– who else are you going to pay?
Right. Well, that's the thing. They're one of these teams. There's a handful of teams up at the top in terms of like league-wide cap space. I'm pretty sure it's Titans, Chargers, Jets, Raiders. Not in that order. But like those teams – and there's just way more cap space league-wide to go around than teams possibly know what to do with. But like those teams in particular – like I threw out the – I think it was on our show. I threw out the Titans as a team that could like trade for Tua and take on the contract if you can buy a draft pick. And both fan bases hated the idea. But my only point was like the Titans have like $100 million in cap space.
You are never going
to spend that much in free agency. And if you do spend that much in free agency – You're going to give out some really, 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 really bad contracts.
Yes.
But the Jets are in that group of team. It's just like, well, yeah, for them to throw the $14 million franchise tag on Breece Hall, like it's just nothing to them at that point. It's going to be a drop in the bucket. So Breece Hall probably doesn't love it. Fantasy managers definitely don't love it.
Oh, man, I know.
And man, just that sliding doors moment of the Chiefs kind of refusal to give up a third rounder instead of the fourth rounder that they wanted to give up at the trade deadline for Breece Hall. I'm like, I think the Chiefs can probably find another running back and it will be okay. They're rumored to be talking to Travis Etienne potentially. Yeah. That's a potential link up. I actually think that does make sense for them schematically.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can figure out the running back position. But for Breece Hall, I think that will be a sliding doors moment for sure.
We got a lot of free agency talk coming up, but like the Etienne to Chiefs smoke, I actually like that better with the Chiefs than I do with other teams. Like Etienne is just one of the running backs I'm always going to be a little lower than consensus on because he's always been terrible in protection. He's just not a details guy. But I actually thought this year was his most detailed year.
Mm-hmm.
But his strengths complement what the Chiefs already have. The Chiefs' offensive line is going to be really good next year. And they're able to, you know, pack a wall. They can block the 3 to 4 yards. But I've been really kind of marinating on like running back value in the sense, not just the traditional like running backs on Maraway, but just the skill set that I think has more value now, where who are the explosive play getters, which has always been a skill set that's valued.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to weigh, hey, you missed the hole a little bit. The Kenneth Walker.
Yeah. A lot of those guys available this offseason, actually.
Exactly. And that's kind of, I've marinated on a lot because it's like, all right, I can get this guys that can get on base. I need the guys that hit home runs, which is kind of like, it's against my football dogma a little bit, but that's where the football meta is right now, is that you're willing to give up those 0 negative ones because that's what defenses They want you to take the 2-3 yards.
Right.
They don't want to give up the 15, 20, 50 yarders. Well, if you get a guy that can take it to the house with an offensive line, they can get you there. That excites me more than most. And he's getting screens. And yeah, that works with the Chiefs offense too. Yeah. I know that one I don't hate as much as I thought at first glance. A couple other news items. Ryan Poles saying he's looking at all scenarios with DJ Moore, which was, I don't know, just a little bit more like we're keeping the door open a little bit more than I thought.
Oh, they're that door ain't cracked open. That's a very open door.
And I think we're going to talk about maybe, didn't you have a little bit more Bears news that you want to talk about?
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me.
Because I want to talk about this too, like, actually.
Okay, I'm not saying this to be disrespectful, but there is like a weird amount of Tyson Bagent chatter.
I think it's kind of real smoke, actually.
It's definitely real smoke. I think I agree with you on that. Like Ben Johnson, the way he talked about it today, almost made it sound inevitable. And we're going to have to let him go somewhere to really get a starting job. And that seemed inevitable. I've seen people connect like the Cardinals potentially to him.
Yep.
Okay. I have said a lot this offseason, and even at the end of the regular season, that certain teams are going to have to get really creative to find solutions, and we're going to see some real creative and maybe kind of stretches in terms of we're selling this to you. Tyson Bagent, can you really sell him as a starting quarterback?
I mean, sell it more than year and a half ago, no.
Okay.
What he showed most recently, I kind of get it. And I actually have been a little bit kicking myself that I didn't really kind of talk about him on our quarterback show. I brought up all these old backups, and he's one I didn't talk about because I was like, oh, they like him so much. I don't see that kind of that happening, but it seems like they're kind of, you guys are desperate.
Yeah.
His most recent film was actually pretty dang good, pretty impressive when he's been on the field regular season, but mostly preseason stuff too. He's a good athlete. He's got good size, but really understanding the offense kind of has some just intriguing makeup as well as tools, which is like, I'm always going to talk about tools, but there's a lot to him. And this is not a guy I was high on. I kind of thought he was overblown. Chicago media going nuts about this guy.
Admittedly, I will say that a lot of my skepticism is based on when Andy Behrens worked here and we did the show together, and he would always talk about, my meathead Bears fans in the group chat, they all think Bagent's our future. Caleb Williams ain't it. Bagent's our guy. So that might be coloring my vision of the Bagent thing.
What he showed this preseason, they extended him for a reason.
Right.
That money talks. And sometimes it's like, why'd you guys do that then? That was such a curiosity to me why they did that in the preseason. There's a few reasons why smoke kills butt a little bit, I think, because maybe
throw a bone to the radio shows.
Yes. And then I think it was too. It was like, hey, no, just in case, because it wasn't just like a 1 year thing. It was like, okay, we got him covered for a couple of years. He's got a cheap deal. But I do want to bring him up as an interesting candidate and this kind of QB chairs that's going to happen, because with Tanner McKee and him, there's a little bit more real than just kind of like the dart throw, he's a name. Yeah. And also contract wise, look how much Malik Willis is about to get paid.
Right.
And if you're a team like the Cardinals, you just need dart throws. So I'm glad we got to talk about him because it's going to
happen.
Yeah.
And like I said, part it was just like two sides of my brain working against each other where I was like, Tyson Bagent. I'm like, nah, you've been saying that there's going to have to be some creative sell jobs here, and this will be one of them.
And I think maybe how I'll summarize is that it's justified. He's an interesting candidate. He really is, more than maybe people are thinking. All right, we are going to take our first break, and then Matt and I are going to come back. We're going to go over some prospects to watch at the NFL Combine. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, and we are going to talk about a couple prospects to watch, some of the top candidates to watch. The other news item also, Minka Fitzpatrick used as trade bait again, which I actually think is pretty interesting. That's maybe just for me.
Shock.
I had to throw that one in. But yeah, I know, it's so weird how his whole career is playing out. But we're going to talk about some prospects. These are the guys that are going to be hopefully testing, but definitely doing interviews, doing medicals. It's an interesting draft class because there's basically one quarterback, one running back, and a lot of defenders and some tackles. So I'm pretty giddy about some corners, some defensive linemen. It's pretty interesting in that regard. But Matt and I are going to point out some prospects to keep that you guys can keep an eye on this week, watch them testing, just hearing in the news breakout about them. Matt, let's lead us off. Who you got?
I'm not going to lead us off with the wide receiver here.
I was shocked when I saw this, actually.
I have actually decided at this point that my second favorite position to think about, evaluate beyond the receiver position because it pays the bills, is actually linebacker. Mm. And I think especially because it's just really critical and integral to these like modern defenses. And also, it's really hard to find.
Yes, it is.
It's easy to find like functional ones. It's really hard to find a great one that you can put a lot on their shoulders right out the gate. But I think Sonny Styles in this draft might be one of those guys. He's like 6'5", 240 is what he's listed at. We'll see. We'll get official measurements on all these guys this week, which I'm really excited for. Producer Colin was just in the freaking elevator with him, confirmed. Big guy. He was just coming back from his meeting with the Cowboys, apparently, too. So Colin was all jacked up about it. But he probably is not going to make it to 12th overall, I think, though, because he's way too good of a prospect. This guy is I'm excited to hear what you have to say about him, because I've watched a lot of receivers going against Auburn, of course. And, like, number one, he just – I can't believe that guy ever played safety.
Right.
I know that's where he started, but he's so massive and like hulking of a figure. It's wild to think about, but you do see the movement skills. Mm-hmm. He's like a relentless player. And just, I remember a conversation I had with Daniel Jeremiah on the Fantasy Forecast for Mock Draft Monday. I think this was 2 years ago now. We were just talking about like modern NFL linebackers. Like obviously range and coverage ability is key, but height and length, I think, matters more than ever. If we're in this world where we're trying to attack and get explosives over the middle of the field, let's clog those windows up with some guys that can fly around but also have that range. I think this player has that. So whether he tests, you know, he goes through drills, like he's somebody I want to watch this weekend because I think the movement skills and just the projectability. We'll see, like, from – I think there are – when you watch him play, like, there's some, you know, timing and stuff like that as there is with any young linebacker, but – I think he has the traits to really translate early on. We'll see if he can handle the mental workload of being a starting linebacker early on. But, man, really impressive player.
Yeah, Arvell Reese is the other one. Ohio State's going to get even more headlines to talk about him in sex spoilers. But Styles is kind of how they use him in that defense. And actually, the Cowboys – got my arms here. How the Cowboys actually use their defense, or projected to use their defense, like in that Vic Fangio kind of defense, it's actually kind of perfect for a guy like Styles who can play off-ball linebacker but can also line up on the edge and play and drop from there, play the run from there, take on tight ends. A classic almost, he could be a Sam backer. Well, they call it a Jack now, a Jack backer. I know, it's defense. No, but Styles, I love, because this is a great off-ball linebacker class, probably the best that since I've been at least in media, and really I'm trying to even think, just I would say like my draft brain like professionally turned on about 2013-ish, probably the best off-ball linebacker class that I can remember. And really that's awesome because the league needs them. And they're so important now. Teams are finding different ways to kind of use different guys, you know, whether they go nickel personnel, dime personnel, live in different fronts where there's just one guy off ball. But what's cool about Styles is he can do all the modern asks, because that's what he's asked to do at Ohio State under Matt Patricia. Line up on the ball on the edge, much like how Zach Bond is used sometimes for the Eagles.
Okay.
Styles is a better athlete, different type of skill set, but how their usage is, I think, could be very similar. But you were talking about the arm length. And ever since Bobby Wagner's kind of prime, that always stood out to me, because Bobby Wagner's about 6 feet tall, but he has really long arms, almost 34-inch arms. And it always stood out to me because, like you mentioned, like if all these teams are going to play a lot of zone now, we're seeing Mike McDonald and the Seahawks, they play like 88% zone, something like that. It's just like you said, flood the passing lanes. It's like a 2-3 zone in basketball.
Yeah.
Just get arm lanes, arms up there, guys that can recover if they get beat, just make everything tight, tight, tight. And so, he's for sure going top 15, because it's not only that we like him as we're sitting here, it's just everybody loves him. It's just one of these players that everybody loves.
Easy to like. And
he should test well. Like, he's one of these guys, I call him Nick Swishers. From Moneyball, because it's like, well, actual baseball, he's a real person. But in Moneyball, he was the one guy that the analytics guys agreed with and the traditional scouts agreed with. That's what Styles is at linebacker for me.
Totally.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about him. And, I mean, you mentioned Christian Parker, defense coordinator for Dallas. Yes. Obviously, they took Jihad Campbell last year. I think Styles – I liked Campbell a lot. Yeah. I really like him. I think Styles is an even better kind of version along the same archetype. And you never want to put, like, the Fred Warner comparison on anybody, because I think that's, like, unfair at this stage. He's one of those, like – there's probably going to be a Fred Warner in every draft, but that means there's not a Fred Warner in any draft. But he's the exact archetype of guy you're talking about, where you're just, like – he just – cucks that part of the field completely out when you're watching passing games go against the Niners, and you really felt his absence. So if you can even get like a Diet Coke version of that, that would be big for any defense out there.
And that's what the Niners have done when he's been healthy. I mean, this is the first year he's missed a lot of time. It's just that they're able to live in two high coverages, because he's just on first and second down, because he's like Dikembe Mutombo. He's not just getting his hand on everything, but he just he keeps off quarterbacks from even attacking that area. So great point. But already hinted at it. Let's talk about the rest of the Ohio State defenders, because there might be like five that go in the top 15. Arvell Reese might be the first non-quarterback selected after Fernando Mendoza. Also similar kind of play style in the sense that he can be an off-ball linebacker, which I prefer him at, or line up on the edge. Guess what? A lot of modern defenses ask guys to do both, so it's kind of great. I think he's just an impact player. I love his pass rush ability. I think he's developing even a better game sense as far as in coverage. I actually thought he was pretty dang good. He can run vertically. If he has to be an off-ball linebacker, he can play the run. Him and Styles, just really, really like both of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of nuts what the spine of this Ohio State defense
is. It really
was.
Is insane. Like, when you go back and watch it,
it's just not just like, oh yeah, they're pretty good players. It's like, no, they're the best players of this draft.
Yeah.
Because then at defense tackle, they got Caden McDonald, who is more of the run stuffing variety of this draft class. Can line up across the interior, so three tech defensive tackle, one tech, which is nose tackle, can eat blocks. I've been trying to figure out a comparison for him. I'd like to see a little bit more pass rush juice, but that's like every defensive tackle ever that stuffs to run. He's light on his feet, which I really like. He keeps his balance. But a guy that I like kind of after pick 16, the second half of the second round, or first round, I'm sorry, I think that's his range. But he's another guy at defensive tackle. And then at safety, you got Caleb Downs, who is just
pretty
insane.
Good prospect. Yeah,
might be another guy that's up there for a lot of people's big boards as the top non-quarterback. But kind of how Reese and Styles, how we've talked about them, where they can move in different spots, be that chess piece, that's Downs on the back seven.
Yeah.
I'd be wary of some of the people who are throwing out some weird, because of just who's in the news right now, about who's getting compared to. To me, he's kind of more like Buda Baker.
Okay.
Antoine Winfield Jr. That's how I see Downs, as opposed to some people are throwing out the, because Kyle Hamilton got drafted high, Nick Amanawori was also on the Seahawks. Way different style of player.
Yeah, I don't see that really like at all from a comparison standpoint. I mean, it'd be nice you could get like a Kyle Hamilton type, but I don't think that's necessarily what we're looking at here. I like the Buda Baker comparison, a guy that, you know, has definitely moves around. You can weaponize in the right defense. I mean, even Winfield, like the Bucks do so much with him as a blitzer, stuff like that. So, yeah, I think Downs really instinctive player. I'm fascinated to see what he runs here. Like, I think maybe, to me, I don't think he feels like a slow player at all. So I'm interested to see what the 40 time is.
I am too, because that was what happened with Hamilton, was that he didn't run well, but it's like, all right, but he's also 6'4", 225. Like,
yeah.
But no, I think with Downs, it's, his testing, it's not going to be everybody and like, how high can you draft a safety? But if you're the right defense for it, like, he can just be, so just like a center and an off of a defense, like a center of an offense, but for the defense, like that guy that just gives a boost effect on everybody else because he's so, so smart. I really like him. I'm just very curious where he ends up. All right. Another player to watch, because I just knocked off like an entire front seven for Ohio State.
Well, in fairness, there's so many of them, so it's good. Now I'll go back to the well here and I'll talk about a receiver.
Yeah.
Casey Concepcion out of Texas A&M. Really just, listen, I'll be transparent here. I just wrote up a piece actually for the site. My editor, Jason Klubaka, over there on the fantasy side, he's like, if you could just give us like a brief preview of the wide receiver class, it could be quick hitters or whatever. Like, no problem. I wrote like 3,000 words. I couldn't help myself. Just,
of course not.
I didn't even want to write the article. I'll write it. And then I had so much time on the planes yesterday, I just ripped all my early thoughts out.
I can nail some articles on a plane,
exactly.
Man.
And I'm like, these are all like early in pencil thoughts, but here's, again, 3,000 words worth of it. The conclusion of that was, there's just so many different flavors at this wide receiver class, and there's going to be a lot of what I'm going to call essentially preference-based debates, where you get into these fights with people. I know I like this guy. Yep. Really, it's just about your preference. Like, what do you like? That's what's leading this discussion. And I say that to say that my type is that player, like an explosive guy, probably a little undersized. I definitely want to see what he measures in at. I'm hoping he's not, you know, like 5'10", 191. If we can be closer to 6 feet and 195, or, you know, maybe God willing, even closer to 200. Like, even if that doesn't necessarily matter to me, it matters to the league, you know, and like, we've seen that a ton. This would not be the first that lower size separation based receiver that I've fallen in love with and doesn't get the playing time that we would like, you know, the Jaden Reed types. that's like where I'm sort of thinking here, but I just think this guy is one of, if not the best route runners in the class, super explosive, yeah. Transitioned from being more of like a Mickey Mouse player at his previous school to being like a real deal receiver, yes, at Texas A&M, running downfield routes, separating to all three levels. He beats man coverage. His zone recognition and spatial awareness is better than you think. I've seen a lot of reps of him against press coverage, and mm-hmm. I like his release moves. He does have a drop problem.
Yep.
So, like, can't bury the lead there. I don't know what your thoughts are about, like, him with the drops. Like, to me, he's one of these frustrating players that drops, like, if you just wanted to, oversimplify, drops the easy ones, but he makes a spectacular catch. So, you don't know if it's a tracking or a ball skills issue, but some of the way he does drop those easier passes, like, he lets it into his body. He does the annoying, like, almost like you know you have a drops thing, so you start to think about it. Bottom line is it does need to get fixed. It is an issue. He's got to fix it. Hopefully he can. But everything else about the profile is just so good, and I think really fits a league that's hunting for explosive plays right now.
Yeah. No, he's, again, I'm a guy for every position. You know, look at size, you know, as parameters. But he's a smaller guy that I really like because he has more real receiver to him. Like you just said about the route running, beating press, playing physical. I that's what's frustrating. It's concentration drops. As people like to say, but it's just, they drops the easy ones. Think about turning and running before he has the ball, as opposed to, anytime he's contacted or there's a defender near him, he drops it, which I think is actually more concerning.
Totally. Totally agree.
Or then you get the Jerry Judy's of the world where it's both.
Yeah. Right.
So I think with Concepcion, it's like, I really like him. I'm glad you brought him up. I've been trying to gauge where I like him. Cause I could go so high with a player type like this, but this is a guy like that can get dropped into if an already good offense can be that kind of cherry
finishing
on top.
Piece,
that's what he feels like to me. Just I wouldn't like him for everybody, but certain teams I'm just like, I would love him for this team here. Like, I mean, shoot, we talk about it, but the Cardinals. Like, there's just a team that just someone that can have verticality, someone that can add just burst and speed and explosiveness. So I'm glad we got to talk about him. Man, there's so many other guys I can go with. I was trying to actually narrow it down as you're talking. I'll go Jeremiah Love, running back from Notre Dame.
Play the hits, baby.
Play the hits. Just so people know, he's good. He's a three down guy. He can receive the ball. He's pretty good in pass protection. Seems like he has great character as well, which actually matters for a guy that's going to take a lot of touches. Because hey, it's just like a quarterback. If you're giving the ball in your hands all the time, you better be like a solid guy. I think too is like the some of the skill set that you want. And I'm trying to have been gauging how I value explosive plays. What's nice about Love is he has the vision and down-to-down effectiveness. And it's not just boom, bust, runner. Whereas, so that discussion maybe about Kenneth Walker, Travis Etienne, it's a little different. But the fact that he can do all that is what makes him so valuable. There's the whole, we just mentioned with linebackers, where it's like it felt replaceable. But the needle movers are still the needle movers. That's how a running back is. Like, it's more replaceable because the skill set's gotten better. But the needle movers are still the needle movers. If you can take the rock to the house on any touch, that is so valuable right now. At quarterback, guys that push the ball is super valuable. At receiver, can you take the top off or take a ball underneath to the house? And at running back, can you take a screen or a run? And if that safety gets blocked, you're gone. Or you're one-on-one with the safety, you're gone. This is why I think I'm talking about so much about it, is that it's kind of like challenging my football dogma.
Sure.
Because I always sometimes overvalue those singles and doubles hitters. There's actually maybe a guy I'm going to talk about in our next section that might be that.
Neal's of the world.
That is a perfect example. A guy that I consider a third rounder. Yeah. The league's like, well, that's a fifth, sixth rounder. He had injury stuff. So that's not maybe the best one. But
he had his moments as a rookie, too.
That type, though. Like, I've always liked those guys a little bit more than consensus. And right now, I think guys that maybe have iffy vision that are home run hitters but boom bust, they actually have still enough value to stay on the field because that's what you need right now because defenses are playing so top down. So, playing the hits, Jeremiah Love, but I needs a mention because got to keep eyes on him this week.
Any team that you think would fit best for him?
Chiefs, but they need like 15 other things.
We were just talking about this on the fantasy show where him as a potential pick. Well, because we were doing the Travis Etienne discussion, whatever. And then to me, it's just they're – and I said the same thing on the other show. Why not just repeat myself here? When the Falcons did that stupid nonsense of like, we're never going to be picking this high again. We'll just take Michael Penix. You're the Falcons. You will be picking this high again if you don't trade
your second longest playoff drought right now.
If you don't trade your pick away, you will be picking this high again.
Forgot that's not a team anymore.
For Kansas City, They will probably never be picking ninth overall again, at least in this era. And like, this is the Carnell Tate. You drop that guy onto this offense, like, that's the real receiver, not Mickey Mouse receiver that they need. Take a premium position in the top 10 like that. As much as, Jeremiah Love would be awesome there.
I did a show with Mina this morning, and we had a similar discussion where it's like, it would be so awesome. And they need a guy that can take it to the house because the O-line's going to be so good. But they need a receiver. They need this on defense. They need this on defense. Leo Chanel's gone. Okay. But they had the offensive line. They have a good quarterback. It goes and goes and goes. And that's where you're doing, Brett. What have you done for lately, Brett Veach? But like, they, and I think too, is that why, that's why I think the ETN thing is a little bit more. I'm more positive to that signing because now they can address somewhere else as opposed to just looking at the new shiny toy that they want to go. And we also look through and talk about other shows. This is the last thing I'll close on before we hit our break. After the Chiefs, there's not a lot of landing spots for a running back. Like, you have to just go and go and go. Mm. And all these other teams have answers at running back. Maybe Chicago at 25, but they say they want Swift back. 49ers, they have other things to go with. CMC in last year. The Texans maybe at 28, so it might be
a trade
Chiefs,
up, maybe somebody.
Yeah, trade up, or he just falls into the 20s. I think it ends up being a trade up or the Chiefs, but we'll see. No, we are going to take our next break, and then Matt and I are going to come back with a few more prospects to watch, some of the more under the radar type of guys. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back with Football 301. We are going to get into a few more prospects, maybe some of the guys that are more under the radar. I know Matt just brimming with receivers. How about right now we talk about Omar Cooper?
Okay,
about
that? Let's do it.
So Omar Cooper, receiver from Indiana. We talked about the Indiana receivers a few weeks ago. Omar Cooper and Elijah Sherratt. Of course, we got to see a lot of them because Indiana played a lot of games and they scored a lot of points. And they have Fernando Mendoza, the number one pick at quarterback. So these were his receiving options. Omar Cooper, though, I felt like you and I were kind of in lockstep how we viewed him. And we both liked him, kind of the range that we thought he was. But having said that, been a lot of hype built up around him the last few weeks. It felt like literally the day after we talked about him, it felt like the hype got built up. But let's just talk about him right now. Cooper, very fun player, but what do you think about him, Matt? What do you think about him now? What do you think about the hype being built around
him? Big time storyline this week. People, it seems like, are racing to be the Omar Cooper guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was what was interesting about when I first charted him was just, ever since then, like, I did my first two games, I was like, okay, like, I think I got a pretty good sense of what he is. And then I just kind of saw more people. And I'm like, by the way, not exclusively, but a lot of people that I really respect, both like evaluators and like sources that I talked to, were just like, one after the other, like, no, I'm here. Oh, no, actually, I'm here.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm here. No, I'm here. Like, just like building up like where this guy is. And I want to be clear, like, I wrote this up in the article today. I think he's a quality player.
I do too.
And I have my theories on why I think so many people like him, but just like my evaluation of him, like, as I said to you, I came away from watching these Indiana receivers. One, Surratt's like Pat Bryant, you better be power slot or else like that, it ain't gonna happen on the outside. That's a whole nother conversation. With Cooper, both these guys, I did feel like, man, I really came away appreciating Fernando Mendoza's game, who, no shocks, would be the first pick in the draft. Like, yeah, he's good, guys. But for Cooper, he's most in the games I've charted from 2025, almost exclusively a slot player. It's like zone coverage recognition, pretty good. The man coverage stuff is where I get the most like hung up on. He's particularly, I don't think, great working the intermediate middle of the field,
right,
which is a little problematic if that's going to
be a ton of outbreakers.
Pretty good on him. So I kind of think there's this like receiver archetype of, if we want to talk about the peak of it, it's like Malik Nabers. Then I think it's like, then you're in your DJ Moores, or then you're probably like Brandon Ayuk, and then your DJ Moore, and then like Luther Burden. And I think Omar Cooper is like somewhere in this bucket.
It's like all the guys I struggle with.
I know. And
I like Cooper a little. Yeah.
Nabers is like an elite receiver prospect because he was the, I can do stuff with the ball in my hands, really explosive, just hyper efficient with the ball in my hands and explosive player, but he also was like a real receiver.
Yeah.
You know, you could see that. That's why for me, he was an elite prospect, tier one guy. Yep. You could take top 10 in any NFL draft.
That's how I'm graded too.
And he's like, again, the peak of that. Ayuk like became that guy in the league, but he wasn't that guy to start. And then Burden last year, same sort of thing where you clearly saw he needed the seasoning.
Yeah.
His zone cover stuff was pretty mid, but like as a man coverage beater, when you saw him, which you didn't see a ton of, but when you saw it, like, man, he does have the explosibility on those like outbreakers to the field, really snap off and explode. I think you see that with Cooper, and for what it's worth, for what I've heard about Cooper, and we're hoping to have him actually on the fantasy show tomorrow. So that would be pretty confirmed. Look at that there.
Colin, a little tease there. Yeah, well,
fingers crossed. You know, you never know. Like Nick Sirianni said, you know, we were going to be tomorrow. But yeah, so hopefully figure this out more. But he gets great character reports, hard worker. Whereas like Burden, that was a question.
Yes,
right.
Big question.
I think that's just like an interesting comparison to make. But yeah, I like him a lot. I think he obviously brings appeal as an explosive player with the ball in his hands. I do just wonder about that full growth as a route runner in year one and year two. Is he somebody that really blossoms in year three, year four in that way? And do you take that guy 19th overall or top 20 in the draft, or do you take that more like second round, top of second round? To me, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
And that's where I've kind of gravitated to, or how I viewed him. I thought it was pretty safe in viewing him. I was like, I really like him. And I was like, okay, he's probably just in my top 50, somewhere around there. And I've just seen like that, like top 20. And this skill set is one I can get so high with. And the guy that's going to really, to me, a lot of slot stuff, which is not the end all be all. Guys get used that way. But then how I project to him to the outside, how he moves, and this is some of my trade stuff I'm just looking at. I don't know. I see limitations just as
he
a mover.
He gets stuck like, at the top where routes are breaking. Like he does get – because it's funny because, like I said, he's very physical and a really tough player, both as a blocker and with the ball in his hands. Yeah. But he does like get stuck on contact in routes
rigidness.
At times.
Yeah.
It's not the most – like that's the thing with Burden where it's like, okay, he's a little more fluid. So these guys are like perfect comparisons.
Burden is – like freaky athlete. And Neighbors.
That's why I'm excited to see Cooper this weekend. Like, I hope he goes out there and rips it up. And then, by the way, then the hype is only going to go.
Oh, I know. And that, there's a reason Cignetti brought him from James Madison, too. Like, they're, you know, and like, he just kind of encapsulated what they were all about. Like, he was a smart player. He made plays. I really want to say it was the Oregon game, Oregon or Penn State. He makes like a one-handed catch when he's going out there.
Oh, the Penn State one at the end of the game. We're like, well, I don't even know.
That one too. Yeah, and he has one towards the sideline. I want to say against Oregon where it should have just been like a one-yard flat route because they run so many RPOs.
Yeah.
Anyway, just for it and creates a big play off it. And that's the thing. Again, I really like him. Mm-hmm. I only can get usually so high. Shoot, he might just tear it up this week. And I'm like, wow, okay, I got to regauge some things.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're kind of the same, kind of like a good day two prospect that we really like, a round two prospect, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I would say early round two. Like, which I mean, we're splitting hairs ultimately. If you have a real vision for a player, like, and you want to take him in the back of the first round, I guess I would just say, I think that the reason the hype is really built on a player like this is because those yards after catch plays are easy to see.
Yes, they are.
They show up in highlights. Like, again, when you're seeing it on Twitter, it's very easy as opposed to just like, okay, that was a pretty boring, like, boring 10-yard dig route. Yep. But, like, that's where you can get even more of those explosive plays if you have those in your bag. And I don't think he quite has those in the bag yet, but maybe that's something that, like I said, can develop in time. But, you know, and I do get it from a guy that, like I said, blocks well, high character,
a lot of effort, productive.
And it's it is a league right now that's hunting those explosive plays via yards after catch, you know, and those opportunities. So I get where he fits in there and within that, like, receiver archetype. But, yeah, it's just been very interesting to see the process unfold. I also think, too, another thing to mention, like, he was a very, very late declare, not in like his career, but he declared he was going to the draft pretty late. So some people could just be kind of, I'm like myself, I said in the article, like, I need to do more work on this player, like, because we weren't sure if he was going to be in the draft.
I know. I'm kind of glad. And I've talked to some teams and they view him kind of similar to us, or some teams, just a few guys, a few scouts, and they kind of viewed him kind of similar to us. So I kind of made me feel a little bit better on that. But no, it's a good player.
You know, he's a good player. Yeah. I don't think he sucks secretly or anything like that.
We're just gauging him. We're just trying to, like,
he's also one of those guys, and this is the case with all receivers, that once I know where he's going to play in the team he's going to play on, might be like same with Luther Burden.
Yeah.
I remember we talked about this as soon as he was drafted by the Bears, like, okay, all that stuff that I'm worried about with him, like being in the right place at the right time, like he's not going to be great against zone coverage. If he doesn't iron these details out, well, guess who's going to make him iron those details out? And I don't think it's quite the same thing with Cooper, but it's where he lands is really important.
I totally agree. And some other prospects kind of want to bring up, and these are just guys that capture my attention, maybe some positions I'm watching. Caden Curry, he's kind of the unsung hero of the Ohio State defense. I just like him. Like, he just made plays, and it's not usually where this guy's an overachiever type is usually the back end and compliment these type of guys get. he had some more flash plays where I saw some real trace to him. So he's like a day. I think I'm higher on other people. I view him as a day two guy, like a round three. Interesting name, but he's a guy, another the Ohio State defender group that you just have to keep an eye on. But man, this there's a couple positions here where it's not just we already mentioned running back one. With Love, tight end one is Kenyon Sadiq from Oregon, who could have a huge week.
Yes.
And just rise and rise and rise.
I was wondering your thoughts on that because I feel
really like
he,
him. And actually talked with him about or talked with Mina about him a little bit today too, and she was asking if I had a comparison for him, and I was like, I this was a boring way, but I was looking at other highly drafted tight ends, like Vernon Davis. How Vernon Davis was used.
That was what came to mind for me. Okay. Actually. I mean,
Vernon was a little bigger, but yeah,
and he got. He got bigger and stronger as his career went on.
Exactly the same. So explosive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And obviously Vernon Davis lit up the combine when he came
in
here.
4.38. I remembered he ran like a freak because that's when I was a kid, but I didn't remember it was a sub 4.4.
I just remember like back in the old Madden, had like the little feather, the wing shoe, like feather
for
wing
that business
shoe.
Speed,
and it was like the only tight end that had that.
I mean, justifiably. That's when Maryland was just churning out guys that were freaks. But I really like Sadiq. I view him as a top 15 guy. But you just have to understand how he has to be used. So, like, Harold Fannin is doing a lot for him. He, like, Tommy Tremble with the Panthers, that's how I view Sadiq as a blocker. And they're built kind of the same, but Sadiq is way more explosive and way better receiver.
Souped-up version of
but
it.
Yeah, but, like, a souped-up Tommy Tremble, which most people would be like, what? But that's a good thing. That's a good player right now. I have to just be comfortable who takes him, but he's athletic enough to beat to win in the slot, which is the threshold you have to pass. You wouldn't be using him on the outside like Kyle Pitts, but it would just be more like, you know, Diet Coke version of Bowers, I think is a good comparison.
Let's
for
get
him
to Denver. Can we? Can
Great.
We, yeah.
Denver would be an amazing fit
just
for him because he knows
perfect.
How to mitigate that.
100%.
I know. Even Chiefs. But that might be, again, the top of the range. They need other stuff too. But I want to bring him up. But also all the tight ends after him, it's a battle. For who tight end two is, who's tight end three. It's a lot of good players, though. There's a lot – for dynasty fantasy people, like you can get some round 3-4 picks in this draft because there's actually some fun dart throws, especially at tight end, that might turn into your Tucker Kraft. Might turn into your George Kittle down the road. Like there's some guys that are really interesting. Oscar Delp from Georgia is one. I like him because he has some inline ability, as you and me talk with you and Colin all the time. It's like that kind of leads to good things.
Yes.
So he's one, but also running back. I already mentioned, talk about Love, but the battle behind running back one, his teammate, Jadarian Prince is kind of the consensus running back two.
It's interesting.
He's really explosive as well. Yeah. I like him. He's like, I view him as like a round two, round three guy. But after him too, or battling for him, Jonah Coleman from Washington. This is the guy. This is my Devin Neal.
Okay, so the teach tape runner, you know.
And I want to see how he tests. If he runs a 4, I'm not going to take the bait again where I'm going to have him like way too high, but like I appreciate the solid player that he is. But if he has a good week, then I'm like, okay, he might be my running back two. But right now, he's my running back three.
This is a take you're holding on to, and you're going to decide by the end of the weekend like how hard you're going to grip this, or if you're going to maybe let it go a little bit.
I know testing's not the end-all, be-all, but for a guy like him, it is.
Yeah,
for
totally.
How I view him.
Totally.
Yeah, but
I think you made such a great point with the Jeremiah Love thing that how running backs now, like it does really matter if you can make those field-flipping plays, if you can be a home run hitter, it really makes a difference.
It does. It's because there's so many offenses I see that the run games are great. I'm like, why don't you guys turn this to points? It's like, someone's got to make someone miss.
Yeah.
Like, defenses are tackling so well now. It's like, all right, well, that makes making missed tackles or breaking tackles more of a premium because that's the skill set now. So, but I really like him. I just think he's a good back. And I like a round three grade I have on him right now. But again, if he has a good testing, I'm not shying away from it. Emmett Johnson is a running back from Nebraska. I'm sorry. More of a home run hitter type. This is the guy that, like in this discussion, is the guy that he's not a guy that usually I'd weigh a little lower because he has a skinnier lower body. And also has kind of a, like, can be, his vision's okay, but it's not overwhelming, but he can take it to the house. And it's kind of like, how high do I grade that? How high do I not? Another kind of round three, round four back, DeMond Claiborne, I'm sorry, from Wake Forest, kind of same thing. And then Mike Washington from Arkansas is an interesting kind of career.
Yeah, I've seen people get pretty excited about him.
He had a good Senior Bowl week and weird career because I believe he transferred from Buffalo. Never racked up stats, you see, right? And then also this year he goes over 1,000 yards and it's like, he's big. He's explosive. Has some shiftiness, but not crazy amount. But if he has a big week this week, he's one of those guys that could be a speed score wonder. You know, like the Bill Barnwell speed score with the weight and that and speed. So like he's could be one of those types of guys.
It's two quick thoughts here. One, I think we don't do this enough with when we talk about the draft, like the general, the entire flow of the offseason. And what I mean by that is that talking about like the free agent class of running backs, there's a pretty decent amount of names. And you were just saying it earlier, like there's not that many seats available for starting backs. Yeah. So as we analyze this class, that maybe there is that drop off after one, it's going to be really important to sort of get a good gauge of what, like who these players are in case there are injuries to starters on the depth chart. That's a part of it. And then we obviously don't have time to have this conversation here, but I think I want to get it on record maybe on our show later this week. 17 receivers in Dane Brugler's top 100, right? Which number one, it's like, oh boy, I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
number
two, I told you in October. Hey, you're right. I got like a dozen.
And number two, there are not that many receiver spots available as well. So it's just like, it's these skill position guys where there's a lot of like potential depth in the classes, like running back, as you were just talking about, got to really find all the seats available. And there's just not really that many to find out there right now. Like, there's already way too many good receivers. And now this is yet another like deep class. I don't know.
I'm totally right there with you. And also it's like, it's not going to be the last deep class. They're going to just keep coming and keep coming. So then that kind of gets devalued a little bit. And then that also leads us to the first round discussion. It's like, are you sure you want to be the first team taking a receiver?
Yeah.
Or you just want to wait until like maybe we get them in the teens and the 20s and then the run starts.
Yeah, it's maybe like an argument for Jeremiah Love on the inverse there. It's like, well, this is maybe only a class of one. And if you're that team with a need, like you better swing at it now.
Absolutely. All right, we are back. Just a couple postscript items that we're just wanting. Some more news roundup. Because that's
odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Nice. That's just what the combine is, though. It's like,
yeah.
Or even earlier, I was just scouring Twitter, like, okay, that's an interesting. I'll use that in free agency, but not now. But I got to pocket that in the back of my head so I don't forget about that. But a couple of things that you showed me right as literally as we're counting into the show was Trent Williams news.
Yeah.
Left tackle for the San Francisco 49ers, one of the best tackles in the game. Kind of tapered off a little this year, faced some injuries. But what was the news that you saw?
Yeah. The long and short of it is that Adam Schefter from ESPN reported that Trent Williams could be released barring a contractual solution with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I feel like we're having Trent Williams contract discourse every offseason.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Seemingly.
This happened in Washington, too.
Right. So this could totally be nothing. That being said, if it is something, kind of a big something.
It is a big right? something.
Because we've talked about this a lot, that offensive line, they never really, like, truly just invest in it, you know? Trent Williams is kind of the linchpin that they hang your hat on. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the rest of the guys kind of creative players fill in holes.
That's
here.
That's the benefit
they never,
of the Shanahan offense,
which is great. But again, I feel like for the last 3 years, it's been Trent Williams' contract. Like maybe they should go ahead and like draft his successor because of how important he is. And he's one of those tackles, maybe potentially like the first tackle where like he was truly weaponized in the run game, which is why Kyle Shanahan loves having him so much. So I don't really know how to feel about the Niners right now.
I
know
either.
It's a little bit like in living in one world. Last year, I think it felt like we were living in one world that we were kind of leaving behind and slowly moving to the new world. This would be maybe the official sound of the bell that we are in the new world if this does and certainly come to pass. And would be an interesting player to add to the free agent market as well.
It would. I mean, that's like you said, it's been kind of Trent Williams and the funky bunch. Like Pooney's been interesting. But they kind of just get by with average that just gets coached really well and schemed really well and kind of knows like how to run the system. And with the coach that knows how to turn the dials and pull the strings. But with Williams, like, I mean, he's getting up there in age. He definitely tapered off a little bit this year. He's still good to very good even. But he did have games, especially early in the year, where it's just like, okay, that doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's closing it on 40.
Yeah.
But it's been a tremendous career. But I just look at that team, and we talked about a few weeks ago where it's like, I'm not as optimistic about the 49ers next year as I thought maybe I was in December. Because then you start looking at the contracts, you start looking at the roster, and you're like, you guys got a lot of holes.
The roster needs a lot of work. And losing Robert Saleh, you know, Raheem Morris taking his spot, that's right. It's just obviously Saleh, like, got a lot out of those guys last year when they were injured. And, okay, well, they'll be back. But, like, Nick Bosa, like, this is another major injury for him. You know, so there's just, like, a lot to kind of laying under the surface. That's why, by the way, like they're definitely trading Mac Jones. They can tell me all they want that he's not getting traded. Teams are going to want to trade for him, and like you kind of need
strike
draft picks.
Hot.
Yeah, you need draft picks. Like if you can get a third rounder or whatever for Mac Jones, don't be holding out for the second. Just in case Brock Purdy gets hurt. Like Brock Purdy gets hurt, you're screwed anyways.
Yeah,
okay?
Might as well get a top pick.
Exactly.
Anyways,
you might need it to again refresh the talent here.
No, I am looking, and CMC's coming off of what? How many? 370 touches?
480 opportunities, I believe. I said this to him at the Super Bowl. I read off, the, now I can't remember, but it's the I think it's the fourth most a running back has seen since the year 2000. And like all of the other, from an opportunity standpoint, yeah. So targets yeah. plus rush attempts, and all the other guys at the top of the list played when like we were in elementary school.
I was going to say it's probably like Marshall Faulk. Oh my God. And that's, and hitting 30, and it's just a little scary how much he makes that system go. And he had a hard working season last year.
As he said, the hardest year of his life. And after, and by the way, if you guys haven't watched the YouTube version of my interview with him, you should do it, because he was, it was a fantastic conversation. He was super insightful. And my other thought process after that was like, oh, this is a guy who's already thinking about what's my next step. And it'll be an awesome podcaster. Hopefully for us. Hopefully, right. Hopefully it's the Matt Harmon, Christian McCaffrey show.
But bring him in.
But we'll see. But I think he's already kind of thinking about what's next, and you know, I'm sure he's dialed in and focused. But it's just like that's football, man.
Yeah, and the receiver questions. Yeah, it's, and the defense is interesting. And in San Francisco, and like all those young guys played well, but Bosa's come back from injury. Fred Warner, who has staved off injuries, he's not the biggest guy. Is this the first of many that's going to come? Like it's just. Yeah, just a little. Shanahan finds a way to like make them competitive, and he's going to do a great job. But they just have a lot more roster construction stuff that I'm just kind of like, ooh, starting to squint at a little.
Sounds
bit.
Sounds like you're already working on a Cardinals finish ahead of the Niners in the NFC West.
No, don't you dare! No, do not plant that worm.
That's what you get in the postscript section
into my brain. Yeah. Oh yeah. Speaking of postscript, this is really what I wanted to address was I totally forgot we had a mailbag question last week, and I had a bunch of questions on the Bears. I appreciate it, Chicago fans. And some questions about how they address the defense. All right, that made a ton of sense. Defensive tackle, let's go. First round, dress it. Boom, you go there. Maybe you go linebacker. We'll see with Edmonds. Okay, there's stuff on defense you got to address. Mm-hmm. Offense, all systems go. And I got like 3, 4, 5 questions about the left tackle. And I'm just like sitting there.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I know the roster's pretty well. I trust my brain pretty well. And I'm, believe it or not, I do. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, oh man, you know, why did they keep asking me? Trapillo played well. Like, what is everyone like? What's all this? Didn't realize it was patella tendon.
That's
and
right.
I just, my brain forgot it. I thought it was an MCL for some reason.
Well, there was like 3 tackles that ripped up their patella tendon at the end of the season.
And it was
for Trapillo, Ike Ekwonu from the Panthers. Yes. There's another one I think that I'm misremembering.
Yeah. But. Oh, I know. And then and then Tyrell Shavers, the receiver for the Bills. I just remember today that he got hurt. He was a guy that I was like, I swooped up all my dynasty teams because I called this gonna be my next little fight. Yeah, hopefully he comes back healthy like him. But this opens up the need for left tackle, especially for a team like the Bears that I think can make a little push next year if they time it up well. And I mean, just look at the rest of the division of the league. And I just think with Trapillo, I was like, oh man, yeah, he's gonna be a starter. Yeah. We're good. We're like set and forget it. But now, almost definitely not playing next year. And now, who knows how this injury is. Josh Simmons for the Chiefs came back fairly early.
Yeah.
Really early, but his wasn't the same type of tendon. I think it was just a partial tear, full tear. Of course, I'm not a doctor. Of course, I don't have these reports. So I'm just hearsay and what I'm reading. But if left tackle is a need, and we're assuming that Trapillo is gone, and we're assuming we're trying to make a push, and we're assuming we don't want offensive line to fall back anyways because they were so healthy last year outside the left tackle spot, the other 4 played a lot of games. I think they played every game together. I would rather have that first-round pick that they have. They address the trenches in some way. To me, it's defensive tackle. It's lined up perfectly for a defensive tackle or at left tackle. There's some interesting names there. More projecty types, but guys that are going to, I think, rise this year or this week. Monroe Freeling, who I really like from Georgia. I think he's gone before then.
He's got crazy movement skills. Yeah.
Dude, I really like it. He would be a great fit for them, but it's like, I think he'll go like top 18 at this point. Like, I think the league caught on.
Yeah.
So I don't have to keep beating this drum because I think he's great. I really like him. The guy, Max Ihenischer from Arizona State, who I really like, but he's a right tackle. Caleb Lomu from Utah. At left tackle, I really like him. I consider him a top 20 player, maybe even higher. He's battling for OT1 for me, yes, believe it or not.
Wow.
But I think, yeah, but I think others aren't as high, which is all I'm saying is that he might be available for the Bears. He would be a great fit. So I think the Bears have answers at left tackle through the draft, free agency, There's no tackles of free agency. Well, I don't know.
What if when we were talking about Trent Williams gets released by the Niners? Oh, that could be like an interesting one-year mercenary sort of situation. You come in here, you play for us for a year, you get Trippillo back, hopefully healthy the year after that.
I like
it's
that a lot.
It's a team that's pushing, contending. You know, maybe you see the Niners in the NFC playoffs, you get to stick it to them a little bit because they didn't give you your 50th raise or whatever. So, I don't know. That could be – to me, I wonder if – it just comes down, obviously, to their medical reports on Trippillo and what they feel like. Is this an injury that's, you know, you hate to say it, but like career changing. Not career ending, but career changing for a guy that was more of a right tackle in college, like that type of prospect, but was giving them some pretty good play at left tackle. Because Theo Benedict was interesting. Interesting as a run blocker, not in pass protection. Interesting running the deep post routes, but still working on those charts. They'll be coming soon. Braxton Jones, I think they're probably done with that. So yeah, they have some internal options if it gets desperate. But yeah, I wonder about like a big swing like that.
I know they have Trent Williams one is interesting.
You don't know a lot of cap space, though. There is that.
That was like the one stopgap name that came to mind was Josh Nyman, who was a Packer, then with the Panthers the last few years. But he had to play because Ike Ekwonu.
I know. I wonder if they bring him back.
He might just go right back to Carolina anyways. But that was like another name, and that's the thing. There are any free agency options. It's like, hey, what do you think at tackle? Mm-hmm. And there's Walker from the Packers, but he's going to go way too expensive, I think, for them. So that's where – and day two has got some interesting names. If you want to go tackle first round, D tackle second round, I would really like that one too. Okay. They had one skill players last year. Okay, now we address the trenches. They're good there. I mean, a running back would be fun. You know what I mean? But then it gets back into like, oh yeah, Tyler Allgeier. But then it was just like, well, what did I talk about? Home run hitters.
All right. Yeah.
Any other loose ends that we got here? Oh, Davis Webb for the Panthers calling plays.
Broncos.
What did I say?
You said Panthers.
Davis Webb.
Yeah.
He has not fired himself and hired Davis Webb.
The Panthers are on the screen now. Yeah.
Sean Payton essentially took play calling duties away from himself, gave it to Davis Webb. Yes, but maybe this was his little carrot at the end of the stick to bring him back.
Yeah, as I said to you on the fantasy show, he fired his henchman, Joe Lombardi, and a longtime Sean Payton henchman, and now he's going to promote
Pete Carmichael's in Buffalo.
So, yeah, and I do think if you're looking at this charitably, like it is an opportunity for Davis Webb, who is one of these guys like Sean Mannion, David Blau, just – these guys were backup quarterbacks in the league like 2 seconds ago, not that long ago whatsoever. And they are fast risers in the coaching business. And it is good for Webb. Like he was a guy that was potentially rumored as a head coaching candidate for like the Raiders and the Bills. Yep. Of course, the thing with the Bills was, he's friends with Josh Allen, which is the number one quality for the head coach in Buffalo. You got to be buddies with Josh. But so obviously this is a big opportunity for him. He'll be able to call plays for this team, and then again, you know, it could be a head coaching candidate in next year's cycle. I think this is interesting because one, Sean Payton's not a guy that strikes me as somebody that likes to give up control.
He's never given up play calling.
No, the only year that somebody other than Sean Payton called plays for the Saints was when he was suspended for a year, and Pete Carmichael, I believe, called the plays that year. So, it's just really interesting development for Sean. I do wonder if it's a game management based thing, like if he wants to be more involved in more things. And then for Webb, it's a big opportunity for him. Obviously, an unknown. He's a fast riser in the coaching industry, and in terms of the Broncos' offense, like they have a lot of questions. I would say not. Like, I know what their identity is, but I still feel like they need, like I mentioned, Kenyon Sadiq would be a great pick for them. I think they need another receiver in the room too. You know, probably another running. Like they've added a lot of guys to the mix.
Yeah.
Some swings have worked. Some swings have not. They need, I think, just some more premium talent in the room there that I think would help like activate the scheme more.
Yeah. They need outside of just those designer plays, they need guys that can, again, take something to the house. They're
Cortland Sutton, another year older too. And like the classic, he can be year one, but I would prefer if he was year two.
Yeah. Or has another guy take a bunch of touches. Totally. It's like, they try to get Pat Bryant going, he gets banged up. It's,
oh my God. Yeah.
Webb's interesting. Like, that's the thing is, this is now he's calling plays. So now we're going to have data points about how he actually is.
Before. Yeah.
Because that's the thing we were talking about too, with a week or two ago, was that head coaches that on your show, that head coaches coordinators that get the head coaching job, and then they're like, I'm calling plays for the first time, right, too. It's like, whoa. Like, that's a lot to put on your plate right now. So now you get some reps at it, then become a head coach and potentially do that. Also gives Sean Payton a nice little political buffer in case anything goes south. Maybe there's a little, some stuff that falls back and regresses, and you go, hey, first time play caller.
Yeah,
it
wasn't me.
Yeah. And they had some stuff with play calls in the sense where there's some personnel substitutions that cropped up a lot this year. And so maybe that's where Peyton's saying, like, I can help out with that. There's a lot of things. We're not in the building and everything. But it's very interesting to me because Sean Payton is not that type of guy. He is very type A.
Yeah.
Most head coaches
like
Davis
Webb a lot.
Correct.
To come back to the firing the henchman, Joe Lombardi, clearing the way, and then giving him the promotion. Like,
yeah.
This must mean he sees a lot in Davis Webb. So he'll be a guy to monitor this entire year because, yeah, we had a lot of coaching turnover this year. That will probably not happen again. Now, I don't think we're going to have 10 spots open or whatever.
Coaching play caller changes.
Yeah, yeah. Right. 10 returning offensive coordinators last year, 4 in the AFC, 6 in the NFC. You can tell I have that memorized from the coaches show.
Yeah.
We won't see that level of turnover, but there will be a good significant amount because there always is, and people always want to find the next hot play caller.
Always, especially if you're under 35, and I think he's like 31.
Yeah, I think he's
well younger than me.
Dude. Declan Doyle, 29 years old. He was born in 1996.
David Blouse, 30 on the dot. He was born in 1996. Oh, and Twister came out. All right, we're closing.
Never seen it, by the way.
You haven't seen Twister?
No.
Do you see Twisters?
No. What is that, the second one?
Yeah. I was going to say it's like Alien and Aliens. You probably haven't seen that either, so that's why.
No, I've never seen the Alien. Wait, there's a Twister and then there's Twisters?
Yeah, so
Twister. Which one's about the tornadoes?
Both. So Twister came out in 96, and it's a great schlock movie, disaster movie. Bill Paxton's in it. Philip Seymour Hoffman in an early role is in it. And then it's notable for me is because right when I moved to Minnesota, and it was right during tornado season, I had no idea what a tornado was. And then my parents were like, we're going to go see Twister.
Yeah,
and guess what? We're just moving to Tornado Alley.
Yeah.
Welcome to you. But then there's Twisters, which came out a couple of years ago. It's actually very entertaining.
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
It's got, what's his face in it? What was it? Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
The It Man right now. Yes. But it's actually very entertaining. So.
Okay, well, I'll put it on the list of things to never watch.
Yeah, I know. I could list it off like 50.
Yeah, I'll put it on the list of movies I'm never going to watch. Great.
It's actually more up your alley than I think you realize.
Yeah, listen, I got no time to watch a film because I'm watching the film. Okay.
I'm 17 top
exactly.
50 receivers.
Usually, we even got it on the screen here. Twisters. Is this like a copyright thing? I don't know.
It's great. No, it's good. That's Cal. No, it's the same Cal. No, it's one of those. I don't want to talk about Twister.
I was going to say, what are you about to say?
Because I could keep going with the story. I saw the Mall of America, all this stuff. No, but also speaking of receivers, it's not always a good thing when it's like, oh yeah, there's 17 of these guys. That means the other positions. That means tackles are going to go up. So that's my kind of draft. So
oh,
I might have to bring that up as well.
Oh,
but
fair.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
Just like Twister's my kind of movie.
I'm never gonna watch these tornado movies.
This draft is my kind of draft. There'll be a lot of trenches and apparently a lot of receivers, but we're closing it out today. We'll be back on Thursday. Me and Matt, potentially a friend, but more from Indy at the combine. That's why I said potentially.
Yeah, potentially.
Sure.
I like it. We'll see what
we got 90s some fun people sitting around us. We got the Ringer boys sitting around us.
We got
a bunch of guys.
Anybody come on this show.
See guys.
See what they think about Twister.
Actually, yeah, we bring them on over. We do
rewatchables. I would set the over-under on prospects in this draft that have seen Twister at like 1.5 because it's an older movie.
Let's go Mark Cooper.
I'm going to ask
him. I think I got some interviews lined up too, so I'll ask them as
well. You do that. I'm gonna save the hard-hitting stuff for my show.
Yeah, that's a good one. We think about movies that came out in their birth year. Because this draft has to be like 94, 95. Have you seen Pulp Fiction? All right, we're wrapping up today. It's been enough.
It's 94. It's not okay.
That's 94.
Yeah, because these guys 22. Were not born in 94.
Yeah,
they were in like 2000.
Oh yeah, they were. I was thinking Doyle.
You're thinking about the coaches.
I was thinking of Doyle. That's why my math went 2 years older because then I was like, oh, it's 30. It's not 20. Yeah, it's 2026, and this is the NFL Combine in 2026 in Indianapolis. I'll be here for the next couple of years.
We're this guy needs to get to a bar like now.
I know. I was cooped up in my hotel room doing shows, lugging all my equipment across the country to do podcasts about the Combine from my hotel room. It felt very ironic, which I thought was funny. But not here at the set. It's great in Indy, but we'll be back on Thursday. Let's just wrap the show up. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at @Nate_Tice. That's Matt Harmon. Thanks for joining me, Matt. You can find him at @MattHarmon_BYB. Oh, my God. Thanks to the crew here that's helping us out. But also make sure. Yeah, we'll do it backwards. Maddie, Colin, Madison, Stone back home, I believe. Yeah, thank you, everybody, for making us look and sound good, just like you guys did in Super Bowl week. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. 5 stars, pretty please. Leave some comments if you can. We'd enjoy that as well. Also, like and subscribe. I don't know why I said that like that. Like and subscribe to Yahoo Sports YouTube channel, where you can watch us live on Thursday as well. A lot of good stuff here at Yahoo Sports, but we're wrapping it up. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you guys next time.